number 5, U.S. v. Syed. Mr. Salim?
Salim. May it please the court. My name is Maurice James Salem. I represent the appellant in this case, counsel. Your Honors, in this case, the government obtained a turnover order to seize the entire 401k retirement account for the defendant appellant, who was a judgment debtor. And they did this under the Mandatory Victims Restitution Act. The issue that's before you is whether the Consumer Credit Protection Act limits the government to a 25% cap. Our contention is that it does, and the case United States versus Lee makes it clear that the government is limited to 25% of the retirement account. Now,
let me ask you this. Do the retirement plans allow Syed to receive periodic payments now, or do they simply allow him to elect for such payments when he reaches retirement age?
They allow him to elect such payments when he reaches retirement age. And that's the main distinction, the issue that opposing counsel in the district court raised as distinguishing Lee from this case. The district court said that, well, first of all, there's nothing in the record that says Lee could not take the entire account, the lump sum money, immediately. There's nothing in the record there. The district court says that it seems unlikely that that's the case. But we're dealing with the 401k retirement plan in Lee, and we're dealing with it here. Now,
but the issue in Lee was his receipt of periodic payments, correct?
Correct.
And that the holding only applied to the ability to access periodic payments, correct?
That's correct.
There are no periodic payments in this case. The question here is whether or not your client had access to the funds immediately.
Correct. So
doesn't that distinguish the holding in Lee from these circumstances?
No, it doesn't, and let me explain why. There's nothing in the record in Lee that says Lee could not immediately access everything and take a lump sum. It happens to be that Lee was at the point at retirement age where he received periodic payments. In this case, that's not the issue. But however, that doesn't distinguish Lee.
You're saying that something was not there in Lee should be helpful to us here, because here we have this present access, unconditional, to a lump sum payment. Is your argument that because that wasn't mentioned in Lee, that Lee still applies?
That's one argument, but Your Honors, the Consumer Credit Protection Act wasn't just enacted to protect consumers. The intent of Congress with that act is also to protect taxpayers, because let's assume you rule against my client and you seize the entire 401k plan. Now, in this particular case, you have a middle-class individual who has typical middle-class expenses, two kids, college-bound, house, car, all the payments. On top of that, he lost all his non-exempt assets. He's got one-third taxes he's got to pay. He has 25% garnishment. Even over $100,000 salary will not meet that middle class expenses. So in another 10 years from now, when he retires, he'll not have a retirement account, and he will qualify for public aid. By allowing a private judgment creditor, which is the case here, it's not the government that's collecting the money, it's a private individual. By allowing a private judgment creditor to put the judgment debtor in a situation where they could qualify for public aid, then it's the taxpayers who are paying the judgment, not the defendant. And I believe that's the intent that Congress had by enacting the Consumer Credit Protection Plan. The case law that opposing counsel cites has already been discussed. Most of it has been discussed in Lee, with respect to the
Didn't the parties in Lee agree that the government could access any funds to which he had immediate right of distribution?
Well, no, the parties did agree that if he takes it out lump sum, then they can access that.
But, or if he had the ability to do so.
Well, the thing is this. These are the parties speaking, and it's hypothetical, it's dicta. And had the if Lee was to address that, then we would get a clear picture. But right now, I believe that this panel is bound by Lee, as well as the district court is bound by the findings in Lee. But keep in mind, let's say the definition of income is defined under the CCPA, and Lee defined the definition of income, and they defined it as periodic payments made pursuant to a pension or retirement plan. And that's the crux of Lee, that it is whether or not we're going to put the judgment debtor in a situation where he loses the entire retirement account. And also keep in mind, now if you do rule against my client, you're setting a precedent. And there are going to be other appellants who are not in the same financial circumstances as my client, making less. And then for sure you'll push them into a public, in a financial status where they qualify for public aid.
But if we ruled in your favor, wouldn't the impact be, or a possible impact be, that all judgment debtors will set up retirement accounts to immediately receive periodic payments so the cap will apply rather than waiting until retirement?
And then what that'll do... That's correct. But I apologize.
Go ahead. Right. That's another consequence.
And I mentioned that in my brief. Yeah. But when you do that, then you get rid of all retirement accounts for individuals in this status. And if you proceed further, you will jeopardize having the taxpayers paying the judgment. Because if an individual is not receiving public from his retirement account periodic payments now, they're all going to rush and say, well, give me periodic payments now. Even though they're going to get penalized, they're going to pay higher taxes, but obviously it would make sense to do that and take advantage of the 25% cap. So they will all do it. So that'll be the consequences of a decision against my client today. So,
well, as a policy matter, how should we factor in the rights of crime victims, their right to be compensated for the wrongs perpetrated against them?
And that is absolutely. And as a matter of fact, that's the statute that the council is using is the Mandatory Victims Restitution Act. Now, And in this particular case, the statute allows the U.S. attorney to use all their power to collect with all that they can from a client like mine. And they did, Your Honors. My issue is, let's not have the taxpayer pay this person's judgment. Let's follow the Congress, the statute, the CCPA, and do what it says. Do what Lee says, and also I want to emphasize that the...
But then getting back to the crime victims,
sure.
If all the money coming directly from regularly earned salary is protected, then the defendant could shield all the assets, including savings, checkings, and investment accounts, from the victims, right?
Your Honor, as I theoretically, that is true, but understand that when you have an income and that income is being garnished 25%, that's what the statute is there for. In all countries that give public aid, they prohibit a judgment creditor from putting the judgment debtor in a financial situation where they qualify for public aid.
But that argument that you're promulgating hasn't been adopted by any court, has it? Nobody's ruled in your favor under that theory.
I believe Lee supports me on this, the case Lee, because they prevented the entire amount. And also the 11th Circuit and the 5th Circuit.
Lee didn't prevent the entire amount. The entire amount was not at issue there. The only thing at issue in Lee was periodic payments.
Well, whether or not to garnish all of it or just 25 maximum, and in Lee they decided that it's 25 maximum 25% of the payment.
Of the periodic payment.
Right. And I want to emphasize...
Now, you know, you're in your rebuttal time.
Yes, I do. May I save a minute in my rebuttal?
Certainly.
Thank you, Your Honors. Okay. Lost track of time.
All right. Mr. Stewart?
May it please the Court? Mr. Seid? Your Honor, criminal defendants such as Mr. Seid find themselves in a pretty awful predicament. The statute that allows us to enforce a restitution judgment or criminal fine allows us to enforce that judgment against all the defendant's property and rights to property. That's a phrase that has a long history. This Court has interpreted it because it comes from the tax code. And basically that phrase, property and rights to property, describes just about everything and anything that a defendant could own. So when we go to enforce a judgment, we basically can enforce that judgment against all the property of the defendant. The defendant then is in the predicament of trying to shelter some of that property. The statute gives the defendant very few options to shelter property. One of those options is earnings. That's the exemption that Mr. Seid tried to convince the court that these monies in his two retirement accounts were entitled to protection by. The problem was that he didn't meet the definition of earnings. And you would simply look at the definition of earnings, and one big element of that definition of earnings under the Consumer Credit Protection Act is that it's a kind of payment that comes in periods.
One of the goals of the Act was to protect the debtor from becoming bankrupt or a ward of the state.
That's correct.
So in terms of our ruling, do you think that would thwart Congress's intent?
No, Your Honor.
What if the debtor was only a couple years away from retirement age?
Congress has protected what it defines as earnings. Congress has not protected a savings account that might have been accumulated from earnings. That's simply a choice that Congress made. And in this case, the monies in this retirement account really were no different than had Mr. Saeed put them in a segregated savings account that didn't have the label 401k individual retirement account.
So the consequence could be, in ruling in your favor, that defendants subject to restitution judgments will simply restructure their retirement benefits to foreclose access to the immediate lump sum payments.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know if that's a realistic possibility. With regard to retirement plans, my experience with retirement plans is that they're typically crafted by an employer for more than just a defendant. And with individual retirement accounts and 401ks, those are structured according to, the Internal Revenue Code. So I'm not sure that is such an issue. And it would be something that Congress would need to address at that point, I suppose, if we found that criminal defendants, in addition to engaging in fraudulent schemes, were also engaging in schemes to hide their assets from the government when it came time to pay a fine or restitution. But that goes back to the original point, which is that when Congress devised the enforcement statutes at issue here, 3613 and the limited exemptions, it was trying to prevent the criminal defendants from any opportunity to shield their assets from the government collector. And that is really the point right here, is that there's very few opportunities for a defendant to shield their assets. Certainly they cannot shield, put their money in a bank account and shield it from the United States when it's enforcing a criminal money judgment. This court's decision in Lee really supports that proposition. In Lee, it was addressed to periodic payments, and this court overturned a district court opinion allowing the government to entirely seize a periodic payment. It said no, you can't do that, that this is a periodic payment. It meets the definition of the Consumer Credit Protection Act. So I do think that there is, you know, there is an issue with overturning this particular decision, because if, I mean, most of people's wealth does come from their earnings, and most of it is put into either a savings account or some sort of retirement account. And if that is, if that is, you know, that is the definition of earnings, then there's really nothing that could be that couldn't be sheltered by just simply calling it earnings. But, you know, even in the context of a civil judgment, that wouldn't work. Earnings, because there's this definition of periodicity that goes along, this element of periodicity that goes along with the definition of earnings, it requires these payments to be made over time. It doesn't, once the payment is made from employer or employer plan, pension plan, what have you, to the employee or to the annuitant, the exemption's lost. There's a case actually that was cited by Mr. Saeed. It's a Ninth Circuit case called Usury versus First National Bank of Arizona that holds just that. Once earnings are deposited into a bank account, they lose their exempt status. So even in a civil context, you know, the idea of accumulating earnings and making them and maintaining their exempt character wouldn't work. The problem that Mr. Saeed has is that if this was a civil judgment that was being enforced, he could rely on a state statute, multiple state statutes that do shelter retirement earnings. But Congress made a choice with regard to criminal money judgments and said that those would not be subject to, that retirement accounts would be subject to enforcement. So if there's no further questions,
there are no further questions.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stewart. How much time? 1 minute.
Your Honor, the case that counsel mentions, Usury versus First National Bank, that dealt with tax returns. And tax returns are defined not as income, and that's well settled. The Consumer Credit Protection Act defines what earnings are. Lee defines what earnings are, and I believe that this court is bound by the statute and by Lee. And I also ask this court to take into consideration the taxpayers and whether or not your decision will affect the taxpayers paying the judgment ultimately. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will take a brief recess.